All right, you didn't want to hear from me again, but my postdoc, or I guess the official title is research scientist, being recently had a baby, so I inherit this responsibility. That's okay. On this project, what we wanted to do is look at what has happened to the export elasticity demand for U.S. cotton. And that's fairly important from the standpoint of understanding how market dynamics are likely to play out inside the U.S. versus outside the U.S. when we're talking about exports. When we're looking at agricultural policy, we're looking at a number of other things, if we're trying to calculate what the impacts are, we need some idea about what the elasticity of demand is or how responsive quantity demand it is to changes in price. And it's been a while since we've looked at this. So Patty Duffy, James Richardson, Mike Wolgenot, when Mike was at Texas A&M, nearly 20 years ago is the last time anybody's actually looked at the export elasticity demand. And so, obviously that's changed. And 20 years ago, we were consuming 70% of domestic production, exporting 30%. And that's now more than inverted. So we want to get a sense for how that might have evolved or changed over time. In this first cut, what we wanted to do is just sort of replicate Patty Duffy's work because it was sort of a benchmark at the time. There are issues with the Armington framework. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them, but some assumptions that you have to make. But, of course, the big one is that the elasticity of substitution between any two products is constant and equal to the elasticity of substitution between any other product in the pair of that. In that pair of markets. So what you ended up doing is making some pretty constraining assumptions in order to estimate the model fairly cleanly. The basic structure is pretty simple. We look at how we analyze it. You have the quantity of cotton from country J, say the U.S., in China, divided by the total consumption of cotton in China. So basically a market share of U.S. cotton in China. The trick comes in what prices are you going to use? The price of cotton from country J, so the price of U.S. cotton in China, divided by some sort of a price index of cotton in China. Well, we all know how reliable prices are or can be in some of these situations, so I'll talk about that in a moment. Then the elasticity of substitution is something that we're looking to estimate. If we look at the price elasticity demand, when we look at the total demand elasticity, you have to take into account the expenditure share that China is spending on U.S. cotton. That's what that elasticity is related to, and then the total demand elasticity. So you need to have at least some idea what the total demand elasticity is in China in order to get to calculate what the elasticity for U.S. cotton in China is, and that's what we're after. So we'll talk about some of those assumptions. One of the things that we wanted to look at was that price variable. This is somewhat of a sticky issue. So we really looked at two different prices. One is the U.S. cotton price plus transportation costs to that country times the exchange rate with that country divided by a general price index. Okay, so what we did is we took the price in the like a GDP deflator in whatever country that was, but we used an industrial GDP deflator or a GDP for industrial goods. The second scenario is we took the U.S. cotton price, same thing, but in that case we divided it by the average domestic price in that country during that time period. Okay, so. We took a quote of Chinese prices and we divided it through to come up with that. So the domestic price data, sometimes a little more suspect, but we wanted to try both methods to see what we came up with. And of course, we're looking over a pretty long time period. We're using real prices, pretty standard there. On this this one, it shows you the coefficients. I'm not going to spend time talking about it. The column I want you to pay most attention to is the right-hand column, the R square, which is the percent of the variation in that market share that's explained by our right-hand side variables, the price ratios, that sort of stuff. Well, in terms of a time series model, those are pretty low. 50% is a pretty low. It's not terrible, but there's a lot of stuff going on out there that we're not capturing in this model. But if you notice, you get down there like Taiwan, that's 15%. That is a really bad model when it comes to Taiwan, which means that there's something else happening there structurally that's driving the U.S. market share. My guess is for a country like Taiwan, it's basically the long-standing contractual relationships that exist that have nothing to do with economics. It has to do with our support of Taiwan politically, not an economic tie. But, there's some variability there across those. You continue on down the line, you see all these other countries that we did. Interestingly, John, other Latin America, we can explain our market share in Latin America, I guess probably because it's bad. The U.S. market share in Latin America is getting pretty bad. Those give you some idea of where we're at. The big thing we want to talk about is the elasticities, because that's where the changes occurred. Now, again, like I said back in that equation, you have to assume a total demand elasticity in order to get the export demand elasticity. So what we did is we took the sort of two extremes, zero, so there's no relationship at all, -1, which is a perfect unitary elasticity, and then the total demand elasticity that we use in our estimates, in our projections, of -0.09. So demand elasticity for cotton's pretty inelastic in total, and so that's we use that just to give us a range. So you can see the results, the two rows for each country. The light row represents the price index. The dark row represents, or the shaded row represents, the results when we use the average price in that country. And I actually like those a little better. But you can see that, like in China, using our middle column there, -0.27, very inelastic relative to what it used to be. If we go back to the Duffy article, most U.S. elasticities were elastic, somewhere above 1 in absolute values, but bigger than -1. I mean, smaller than -1, or just under 1. Okay, so they were right around elastic. In our case, we have a lot of inelasticity. Now, at first, I'm a little bit concerned about what those values are. I'm looking at them, and they range. If you go across the rows there, -2.6 and -3.3. So there's some variability depending on what the total elasticity is. But the bottom line in that is that we're more inelastic than we used to be. But that makes perfect sense when you think about what's happened to U.S. exports globally. The U.S. is now the residual supplier of cotton to the rest of the world, which means that when people come to the U.S. to buy cotton, they don't really care what the price is. That they need cotton, so they're coming to buy cotton out of the U.S. So it's not particularly price sensitive. Now, Josh Burrows, merchant, last night we were talking about this issue, that if you look at sort of current prices and how, we get these export reports, we get sales reports, we get all these sorts of things, and the price just keeps hanging in there and hanging in there. Well, that's because we're in an export phase in the world market. Nobody really cares. I mean, they need the cotton, so they're just buying it. They're somewhat sensitive, but they're not very sensitive. But there's a little concept in, for those back to economics 101, is you take one over the elasticity demand to get the price flexibility, approximately, right? What does that tell us? When you have an extremely inelastic demand, that means you have an extremely, on the other side, you have extremely flexible prices. So what that says is that marginal changes out in that market have a huge price impact. So if the U.S. all of a sudden has a big crop relative to what the global demand is, it can have a huge impact on price. That's what this would imply. Now, does that happen? No, because we don't fluctuate that much. But if you go back and we see the run up to $2 a pound in cotton, why was that? Because the U.S. had no stocks in warehouses. It had nothing in the pipeline to ship into the world market, and all of a sudden people needed cotton. So the price shot way up because there was no supply out there for people to get a hold of. So international prices are incredibly flexible. So in other words, they move up and down, can move up and down quite rapidly, but demand is very inelastic, which means that nobody really, they're going out and they're buying that cotton, and the price is not really driving it. Now, do I believe they're this low? No, I think there's some issues here in terms of the sample period, and I think if we restricted that or allowed those parameters to vary through time, we would get a little bit more elastic response. But I still think it makes perfect sense to be more inelastic than we used to be. And that's sort of the bottom line story on that. So when we look at, overall, there's a couple of these markets that are kind of strange. You know, South Korea, it was very inelastic. Taiwan was very inelastic when you look at those sorts of things. But the relatively large changes in the overall demand don't seem to have much of an effect on the elasticity of demand for U.S. exports in those markets. So even though changes may be occurring, like John, we were talking about, changes may be occurring in the demand elasticity for cotton in those individual countries, it's really not having much of an impact on their willingness or their responsiveness to U.S. prices in what they consume there. So as Bangladesh may be becoming more inelastic in demand, or China may be becoming more inelastic in demand domestically for cotton, that's really not going to have much of an impact on the U.S. exports, or U.S. export elasticity. So I think that, that's a bit of, if you want to call it good news, I don't know, but it's a dependent factor of the fact that we are export dependent. But that also goes back to that previous presentation, makes us much more vulnerable to things like exchange rate changes in terms of our overall market behavior. So I'll keep us way on time now, and I will way on time.